And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be discussing all that relates to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in via social media using hashtag GiantsChat. And we want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. Hope everyone had a restful Memorial Day weekend as we are back up and running this week on Giants.com. OTAs will pick up tomorrow, so certainly we will weigh in on some of the storylines to watch a little bit later this week. But what we also want to do today on this program is start to project and look ahead to 2016 from a statistical standpoint. When you look at the numbers where the Giants left off in 15, where are the areas that, number one, they can improve, and which individual players do you think can make significant jumps? In one area, Anita, that I think is interesting to take a look at, and those of you who look at Giants.com, I certainly suggest you check this out on our website. We just ranked the top 10 totals of all time in Giants history in terms of sacks in a regular season, and we'll run you through some of the numbers. And, you know, when you look at the defensive line this year, Anita, considering they put so much resource in there, I'm assuming they're going to take a significant jump. The question is, how much of a jump will they take from where they left off in 15?
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you talk about sacks last year, everybody talks about Robert Ayers. As we know, he's no longer on this roster. He's in Tampa. But a big part of the sacks, I want to say he had, a total of 9, and 6 of those 9 took place once JPP came back. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at this defensive line and you look at all the talent on this defensive line, who's going to be able to be double-teamed? I don't think anyone. So it's not just that JPP's back and you know, Vernon is going to benefit from, I mean, I think everybody here is going to, I mean, even Snacks in the middle. I mean, you know, it's not going to, Snacks is the kind of, I'll call him a nose tackle. He's that kind of tackle. You can't punch with one arm and then go focus on someone else. I mean, he is a force to be reckoned with. So I think everybody's going to benefit, and I think everybody's totals are going to go up.
Well, Snacks is not necessarily a guy that's going to get the sacks, but he'll certainly create opportunities for other people because of the pressure that he can get up the middle. He only has about 1.5 sacks over the course of his career. They had 23 last year as a team, and the breakdown was they had 9 in the last 9 games, and obviously that coincided with JPP's return to alleviate some pressure for some of the other guys. But the Giants are going to go into this season. First of all, JPP's going to be there day one. So that should be a huge benefit. You bring in Vernon, and then you hope that the dynamics between Snacks, as you mentioned, Anita, as well as Jonathan Hankins, we tend to focus a lot on what the defensive ends are going to do, but if the defensive tackles stop the run and get pressure up the middle, that's only going to bode well for the guys on the edge as well as the linebackers too. I think if Spags finds that the front four can win their individual battles, I would look to see also get better production getting to the quarterback from the linebackers too, which wasn't necessarily an area that they were able to tap into much last season.
Yeah, I want to say last week you and I talked about some guys that we're focusing in on to maybe take that next step up, that jump in their career, and Devon Kennard is one of them for me. A, he's got to stay healthy and he's got to stay on the football field, but B, I'm with you. I think he's the kind of linebacker that is so athletic and so diverse that I think Spags can really have some fun with him and do a lot with him in that regard and send him more times than not.
Well, Kennard has the most flexibility out of the linebacking unit, especially when you look at his background, how they utilized him at USC. He was down on the line. He was back in coverage. The more and more pressure you bring with your front four, that's only going to allow Kennard to move around and Spags to mix and match him. So that's certainly one area to watch out for. But sacks to me is not necessarily the most important statistic. Quarterback hits to me is probably a better indication, Anita, of how truly consistently you're getting to the quarterback and how your pressure packages are going. Because remember, in this day and age, the quarterbacks are getting rid of the football quicker and quicker. The opportunities to get sacks is limited to begin with, regardless of how much firepower you have on the line.
Oh, absolutely. I do want to ask, I'm curious if this is one of the most exciting seasons for Spagnuolo. I really am. How can it not be? You know, because obviously you consider yourself a defensive genius. You've got a great defensive game plan. You've got all kinds of schemes, but you know, you're at the end of the day, you're only as good as the talent around you and how they can execute and how they can pull it off. And when you look at this roster, and granted, yes, right now it's just on paper, but he looks at this roster and he looks at the talent that he's working with. To me, if I'm him, this has to be one of the most exciting years of my career. I would imagine it is for him, but that's a question I'm going to ask him.
Well, it's good to have options, and you go back to 2007, his first stint as defensive coordinator. That's one of the teams in our top 10 here all time for the Giants. That group had 53 sacks. They had 23 last year. Can they make that jump? You know, that may be a lot, but there's no reason to think that with mixing and matching that Spags can do, that this unit certainly can be much more productive. For those of you watching over on Twitter, we invite you to watch the remainder of the program on Giants.com as we continue our conversation here about areas for the team as well as players where they can make a jump from a statistical front. Lance Meadow, Anita Marks with you here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Back up and running this week. We'll have full editions of our program all the way through Friday. OTAs get back up and running tomorrow, as they'll have a total of 10 workouts before then in the middle of June. From June 14th to June 16th, they're going to have their mandatory mini camp. So that's at least what's on the horizon from a schedule standpoint. We're going to open up the phone lines here, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the lines. We hear from Rick in Oregon. Rick, what's happening?
Hey, hi. How are you guys?
Doing well, Rick. How's things with you?
Things are going good. I got two questions, but they're related. The first question is, on the right side of the offensive line, which player is more important to the running game, the right guard or the right tackle? Then the same question for the passing game.
I look at guards as more important for the rushing game, because you want guards that are athletic who can pull. When you're talking about rushing the football. So for me, I look at guards as being more important in regard to a rushing attack. I look at tackles more important in regard to pass protection, because they're the ones who have to have that really excellent footwork to work their way out and help create that pocket so that quarterback can step up and release that pass safe. So guards, to me, if we're talking about rushing.
I think they're both important, but, I mean, I would agree with Anita, Rick. I think that breakdown is fair. You want versatility from the right guard so that if you run plays off the edge, that right guard can get out in front of traffic and block ahead of perhaps even the tackle and the running back. If you don't have that, then you're really going to be limited in terms of the amount of space that you could create. And the right tackle is going to see some decent pass rushers, too. So in the passing game, you have to have good play from your tackles. Today's game, compared to maybe what was happening 5 or 10 years ago, a lot of teams, the top defensive end doesn't always just line up over the left tackle anymore. They're going to try to play to the strengths of their defense. So if they feel they've got a favorable matchup on your right tackle, they're going to move their top pass rusher up against your right tackle. So you can't always assume, oh, well, you know, our left tackle has to be our best offensive lineman. You need consistency from that right side, too, specifically on the edge.
Okay, guys.
All right, Rick. Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks a lot.
You got it. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Well, that was easy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good question, though. It is a good question when you think about the dynamics of an offensive line. I mean, the cliched answer is, listen, every position is important. I think that goes without saying. But to see where you could be more effective in the running game, that guard spot, I would agree, I think is extremely important.
One more thing about that is that's why I believe offensive linemen love rushing the football more than they enjoy pass protection, is because they have an opportunity to pull. They have an opportunity to get out there in open space and really go up against a linebacker per se. Do you know what I mean? Or go up against a strong safety and really try to create more running room for the running back. So that's what they really enjoy that.
Well, those that can get to the second layer, and you love that as a coach to have those types of players. You have to want that. You know, I go back to the analogy with defense in basketball. You have to want to play defense. You want to have to go out and block. Those you have to have inner desires to do. Sometimes it's not necessarily easy to teach that, especially if you're not one that's prone to adapt to physicality and so forth. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Jason in Denmark. Jason, what's happening? Jason, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. How you doing there, Lance?
Doing well, Jason. How's things with you?
I'm doing great here. No rain here in Denmark, so I'm feeling good.
Well,
no,
that is good to hear.
Hey, for the question of the day, I would like to see the team score on the opening drive. I don't know if that's a statistic that's kept up, but I believe that when we get the ball first and we score on the opening drive and we set that tone for the game, I think we have a better chance in winning the game normally. And the games that we have scored on the first drive and had those long drives where we kept the pace of the game, I think we did well in those games. So I'd like to see more of that this year.
Well, it's an interesting observation on your part, Jason. The one that I would throw out, actually, that I think is of even more significance, and this I do have some stats because I personally have kept track of this, the first possession of the second half has been a very troubling area from a statistical standpoint, Jason, for the Giants. Much more so right. than the opening drive or their first possession in the first quarter. Because if you've noticed, what Tom Coughlin did a lot last season, and it remains to be seen what Ben McAdoo adopts, he usually deferred when the Giants won the kickoff. They did that a lot last season so that they would get right. that first possession in the third quarter. And last season, first possession of the second half, they had 8 punts, an interception, 5 field goals and 2 touchdowns. So only 2 scores where you got in the end zone all of last season off of your first possession of the second half. Then I'll take you back 2 years ago. The numbers are pretty much identical. 9 punts, a fumble, an interception, 2 field goals, and just 3 touchdowns. So the last 2 seasons, they've only had 5 touchdowns on the first possession of the second half. To me, that's the area that I think they want to see better improvement in.
Right. One more thing away from the question of the day. When players are away from the game, I've often heard on the show that, players need to get on the field, they need to get hit, they need to get back in football shape. Is that any different than, say, now Victor Cruz? We're taking our time with him. So if he's saying that he's ready to play and he's 100%, shouldn't we be testing him, even though it's no pads and so on in the last couple of training cycles, should we not put him on the field and at least get his body back into running and throwing flag football?
He is doing that.
Okay, I thought he wasn't doing anything till,
he's training camp. No, he's out there. He's running routes. He's catching footballs. There hasn't been any contact yet.
Okay.
They're not.
Okay, I just wondered about that. I thought he wasn't doing anything and they were just like, holding off.
Well, Jason,
they're taking it slow. They are.
Right.
They're taking it really, really slow. They're just being very, very cautious.
Okay.
Jason, he's doing individual work in terms of working out, running routes, more of an individual basis with the coaching staff. But during the team portion, he's been on the sidelines. So they're not at the point where they want him to run up against a corner or, make different cuts because they don't want to necessarily push him too much. We're going to probably see, from a hopeful standpoint, more of that come training camp. But to say that Victor Cruz is not doing anything during this time period is a little misleading because he is doing his own individual stuff. It's just not necessarily in the team setting when they're actually lining up in 11-on-11s and 7-on-7s and so forth.
Right. And last thing, real short. Last week, Paulie mentioned that JPP had an interception. Is there any way we can get that video on the site so we can seeing that everybody's so concerned with his hand and how he's going to do? And I know it's just training and OTAs and so on, but it would be nice to see that video.
Well, I don't know exactly what's up yet, Jason, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. But, I can tell you our production team does a really good job getting some of the key highlights up, and I know that they've caught mostly everything on film. I'm not exactly sure the exact play that you're talking about, whether or not that's up. Dave, I don't know if you recall if that specific play, he was referring to an interception, if that is up. We could double-check on that, and then we'll try to give you an update on the remainder of the program. But if you check Giants.com, there's highlight packages right now up on the main frame of the site, and you'd be able to see at least some of the notable plays throughout the course of OTAs thus far. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We got AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening? AJ, are you there? AJ going once.
I hear him.
I hear a background noise, too. All right, we'll put AJ on hold. We'll try to get back to him. And unfortunately, by AJ not being ready, that means we got to go to Charlie in Portland, Maine.
This is your favorite
yes,
guy.
Yes, Charlie.
This is your guy.
We'll see. He's certainly never going to turn down an opportunity to talk.
You are so lucky.
I know.
Called in today. How y'all doing?
Oh, well, we could... We could be better right now, but we're okay.
Hey, Anita, did you shoot a 72, I hope?
No, I did not. And unfortunately, right. I didn't play golf this weekend. I worked all weekend long.
Yeah, I did too. But that's all right. It rained most of the time, except for Saturday here. It was warm, but then it was like 55 degrees the next 2 days. But today is beautiful, so everything's good. And I've got to read this. Until this old line is fixed, I'm fixated on it. So you're going to have to bear with me here.
You know, we Pro might as well, Charlie, before you start, we might as well just pre-record your calls from last week and just replay them. I mean, at this point, what else differently are you going to have to say?
I'll change it up a little bit.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Pro Football Focus ranked Giants offensive line 20th in the league 2015, grading Flowers and Newhouse as the worst, say it again, the worst tackle tandem in the NFL. Jerry graded poorly as a run blocker, and Newhouse was unequipped to play on the right side. So for God's sake, they've got to fix the black hole on the right side. If we don't, Jerry spent $200 million guaranteed for nothing, because we will not get in the playoffs. We won't even be competitive unless we fix the offensive line. He's got to understand that and know that. And if they expect an unproven seventh-round draft pick in Hart to come out and be the guy, they're dreaming. We have no depth on the O-line. I don't understand it. Why would you spend all that money and then give Eli $84 million? And you don't want to protect him? You don't want to have a run game for him? It doesn't make any sense.
Again,
I feel
like I don't even like I barely host this show twice a week. I know, Lance, you're here, and John, you and John are here more often than anyone else. But like, you call in, it's the same thing, and I'm telling you, you've just gotta. You got to relax for a second. You got to relax. I don't believe that this is the roster. This is not the final roster that the Giants are going to be entering 2016 with. It's just not.
Charlie, I'll
give you that.
Charlie, you know, the other thing to keep in mind, and, you know, number one, we're still very early on in OTAs, so, you know, the development process of some of these unknown commodities that you're pointing to are taking place right now. It's too early to judge whether or not there's upside and potential on the back end of the depth chart, but, you know, you're making it sound, Charlie, as if there's Pro Bowl-esque offensive linemen right now out on the market that the Giants are not going after and that they're not doing their due diligence. And I'm looking over the free agency list right now. You know, once again, it's slim pickings at this point, this late into free agency. So you're better off working with what you currently have on your roster, seeing what plays out, and then in the event that after OTAs and mini camp and the early stages of training camp, you're not pleased, then perhaps you see what else is out there. But I'm not seeing perhaps what you may be seeing that's dangling out there, that if you sign the guy tomorrow, that all of a sudden this offensive line is turned around.
Well, you need to think trade. And if you traded for Joe Thomas, if you got
how do you know that the Cleveland Browns want to give up Joe Thomas?
How do I know? Because they tried last year, and earlier this year they were talking about getting rid of him, just like they got rid of Schwartz, just like they got rid of Matt.
Well, but those guys were free agents, though. There's a distinct difference. Those players were free agents that you mentioned. Mack and Schwartz were free agents.
Yeah, but wasn't a free agent last year, and they wanted to trade him, and there was rumors they wanted to trade him this year.
Well,
all I'm saying is there's guys out there that you can reach out for and trade for. Now, there is guys out there. Vasquez is out there as a guard. You got Leary from Dallas. He wants a trade. You've got Beattie still out there. Bring him back, for God's sakes. He's better than Newhouse will ever be.
Yeah, but Beattie understands. Charlie, understand something. Beattie wants to play the left side of the line. Beattie's not willing to play the right side of the line, Charlie.
Oh, yes, he is.
No, he's not.
You didn't read a quote. He said,
Beattie,
he will look for a left tackle position, but I'm willing to play other positions. He said that.
Okay. All right.
Well, Beattie, with respect to him, Charlie, the other factor is in terms of health. I mean, you don't know exactly what type of shape he's in right now, considering, you know, he's dealt with some major injuries in the past, so you can't take that for granted as well. That's the other factor with him.
No, I understand that. But the thing is, the thing is, what happens is you have a fallback excuse. The excuse is there's nobody there. There's nobody left. Why isn't there nobody left? Because we didn't do anything when we should have done something in March and April. And then we should have done something in June. But then we'll be waiting to pick up, you know, cow chips in September. That's what we did last year in the safety position, and it didn't work out.
Charlie, you can't
be proactive.
But Charlie, if you look at track records of NFL teams, especially the ones that constantly get to the playoffs and head to the Super Bowl, you can't solve your roster solely with free agency, Charlie. You're expecting every single offseason, every position needs to be addressed in free agency. That can't be the philosophy because of the limits of the salary cap and all the other dynamics. Your undrafted free agents have to contribute. So, you know, you can't keep saying to yourself, oh, I don't like what's on the depth chart. We've got to now tip into the well of free agency. It doesn't work like that. You eventually have to give opportunities.
Just sitting there, we're not using it.
Well, you carry it over, though. But who said you have to spend it, though?
Why would you carry it over when you have the worst tandem tackles in the NFL?
That's according, Charlie, that's according to one website's opinion based on their mathematical. Yes, and I'm not doubting Pro Football Focus, but that's one opinion. If I spoke to 17 different entities to evaluate the Giants' offensive line, I find it hard to believe, Charlie, in fairness, that they would all point to the exact same ranking for the Giants' offensive tackles last season. Let's face it.
I don't think so.
Charlie, it's a very the way those websites look at things, it's a very subjective type of breakdown. In addition to the numbers and the amount of sacks and the rushes and the pressures, it's also the eye test too, which is a very subjective way of looking at things. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying there's no validity to it, but there is subjectivity to that process. You at least need to understand that.
No, I understand. But all I'm saying is if you keep waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and then your prophecy is going to come true that there isn't anybody out there. That's what we did last year. You know, we can't do the same thing this year. The right side of the line needs to be addressed with talent. And I'll keep saying it until it happens. And if it doesn't happen, then I see a repeat coming up of 6-10 again. I'm serious because we have no depth on the O-line. If Pugh gets hurt, what do we have? He's the guy that plugs in all the holes. If he gets hurt, what do we got? And I'll leave it on that.
All right,
Charlie. Have a great day, guys.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call.
Another thing that really isn't really being talked about, and understand something, like I was a big fan of Flats, okay? But you've got a whole new coaching staff here. You've got and also keep in mind that Flowers played last year predominantly hurt. And I commend him because he was out there, and it was his ankle, right? It was his ankle. And that's a very, very difficult position to play if you're dealing with a high ankle sprain. So hopefully, A, this line will be healthier. B, you've got a new coaching staff. They seem pretty excited. And even though there are some guys that, you know, aren't household names that are here competing for some jobs. I'm just, again, listen, Charlie, am I sitting here saying that this is the best offensive line in the NFL? Absolutely not. Okay, is it the lower third? Yes, it is. However, you know what? I don't believe that that's going to be the difference in between this team winning possibly 10 games or only winning, what did he say, four, six?
He said six, I believe.
Or six. I don't believe that with the amount of talent that's been brought on the defensive side of the ball and the amount of points that this offense was able to put up last year, I'm not going to sit here and say that this is a team that's only going to win six games because their offensive line isn't one of the best in the business. I'm not going to say that.
Well, and then some of the hypotheticals that Charlie laid out in terms of trades. First of all, Ron O'Leary is a member of the Dallas Cowboys. How often do division rivals trade offensive linemen or any position to that matter? Do you think Dallas is saying to itself, yes, we want to get rid of one of our starting guards who was in the mix with Lyle Collins
last
season?
We want to give him to the Giants.
We want to give it to a team we got to play two times?
Right.
That's reality. And then the other name, which is thrown out a lot, obviously, you know, with the San Francisco 49ers and Anthony Davis, but there's also questions about, you know, with respect to his health and everything. So, you know, you have to say to yourself whether or not those realistic trade options that you're dangling out there could actually realistically come to fruition.
There's concerns about his health. There's concerns with the fact that he hasn't played for an entire year. And also there's some reports out there that he might be suspended for the first four games. And on top of that, you know, this is a San Francisco 49ers team that's not happy with him right now. And they're in the driver's seat because they own his rights. So if that process of possibly attaining Anthony Davis isn't moving fast enough for Giants, don't necessarily put that on the shoulders of Jerry Reese and this organization, because the San Francisco 49ers are in the driver's seat in a big way. And don't think for a second that only one team might be interested in his services. I'm sure that there are a number of teams that are contacting the San Francisco 49ers for his services. But they are in the driver's seat, and they're taking this really, really slow.
And on top of that, he's still a retired player and has yet to be taken off the retired and reserve list. So that's the number one stumbling block about whether or not there's an interest and a desire to get back on the field and so forth. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. She's Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could spend part of your Tuesday with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, the question of the show. And we invite you to discuss anything with us here on the airwaves. But we did throw out statistics that jump out to you from last season that, you know, you think are important for the Giants to see an increase in terms of production, specifically sacks we've been focusing on, because on our website we put up the top 10 teams all time in Giants history in terms of the most sacks, and one of Spags' units is up there, 2017, that had 53. The record is 1985. That group had 68. Now, to keep things in perspective here, the Giants had 23 sacks last season. And there have been notable jumps in the past, but to go from 23 to 68 may be asking a little too much, but certainly we want to hear your thoughts, perhaps, in the sack department. In the meantime, let's head back to the lines. Dave, we got AJ in South Carolina. Let's try him again. All right, AJ, what's happening?
Oh, thanks for taking the call. I had to pick up the phone earlier. I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
I know the Dwight Freeman still out there on the free agent market. Do you think the Giants will show interest?
Well, Freeney, I know, has been making the rounds in terms of some meetings. I believe the Bengals were reported and the Falcons were reported. I don't know the latest in terms of whether or not he's close to a contract. Freeney, you know, has been around the block since he left Indianapolis. He's been also transitioned more to like a linebacker as opposed to a defensive end where he was utilized with Indianapolis in the early days. I mean, the Giants, remember, they address their defense. They address their defensive line. They've brought in some young guys. I don't know necessarily if that's the one position that they're looking to bring in another name. I would think maybe there may be another area depending on what plays out in training camp, but I think it'd be pure speculation, AJ, at this point to say whether or not they would go after somebody like that. And it also depends on a player like Freeney. You know, does he want to come into a position, AJ, where he's going to be a rotational guy or bench guy, or does he want to start? You know, if you look at Arizona, he was a pretty integral part of their defense last season. If you come here to this team, there's no guarantee you're going to get that type of a role.
I know he had 8 sacks for last season.
I didn't hear you, AJ. What'd you say?
I know he had 8 sacks last season.
Well, he was productive, certainly last season, in where he was and how he was used. But, you know, I think you got to look at how a player is used in a system as opposed to, will that necessarily equate to another location or another team? That's really what it comes down to. Just because somebody puts up X amount of numbers in one scheme doesn't mean all of a sudden you plug them in and then voila, that's going to happen. Plus, remember, he's up there. I mean, he's got a lot of wear and tear on those tires. He's been a proven veteran for many years.
One more thing before I go. I'm excited about the Giants' linebacker core. I think it's good on paper. As long as stay healthy.
Well, they have a lot of options, AJ, and appreciate the phone call.
The linebacking core?
Yeah.
I don't know. Did we discuss this, or maybe I discussed this with Paul Dottino in regard to, you know, what our expectations are in regard to who's starting? Devon Kennard, JT Thomas, and I think it'll be a really true battle at that middle linebacker position between Keenan Robinson and Jasper Brinkley. I really do, and I think that's going to be one of the most exciting battles to watch. this coming training camp?
Robinson comes over from Washington. They ran a 3-4 there, so Robinson really has been moved around throughout his career. Brinkley's been getting the bulk of the first-team reps from what I saw in the first few OTAs. Robinson, though, has been worked in as well. To me, I still look at Brinkley as the front-runner because he knows the system, and he was very productive down the stretch last season. But that doesn't mean that Robinson can't come in and wow everybody. And you know what? If the two of them prove that they're reliable options and Spags feels he can interchange them, that just puts the Giants in a better position.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think anybody's going to complain about that. Joel is in Plainfield. Joel, what's happening? Joel, are you there?
Yes.
How are we doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How's things with you? What do you got for us?
First time caller. Love the show. Love you guys.
Appreciate that.
That's great.
Yeah, so I'm just excited to be on the phone with you guys.
Well, excited to have you.
Good. So, the defensive line, I think they're going to make the biggest change for the rest of that defense. I think with these guys that we just brought in, it's going to really make it easier to get a lot. I think they're going to get a lot more interceptions due to all the quarterback hurries. And I think the safeties are set. The only thing I'm really worried about is the linebackers. So I'm worried, like, what do you guys think about the linebackers? Do you think that's the weakest point on that defense?
That's a great question. I wouldn't say that I'm worried. Like I said, I'm probably more excited to see this middle linebacking competition that's going to go down between Brinkley and Robinson. But if I had to say where was the weak point on this defense, I'd have to say safety, just because, and I'm sure that Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo would disagree with me, because they feel very strongly about the talent that they have here at the safety position. But like a lot of Giants fans, and we get the calls, I need to see it. I want to see it. I want to be able to watch it. I want to grasp it. I want to wrap my hands around it and say, all right, Nat Burhey, Bennett Jackson, Mikel Thompson, I want to see it. I want to know that those guys are going to be able to step up. And also, I'd like to see Landon Collins take a step up this year. So for me, if I had to say if there was a position, for me it would be safety more so than linebacker.
Yeah, I think it's better to basically say that that's a question mark at this point, because you just don't know what you have, considering these players weren't on the field much in their previous years. Even Burhey, who also has very limited experience, and he's been getting most of the first-team reps with Landon Collins, but you know, you still need to see him more in the atmosphere of preseason games and how he'll function with Landon Collins and how he'll adapt to the system before you maybe get a better grasp of what you have. In terms of the linebackers, Joel, that you started the phone call off with, I think you have depth and you have some options. The bigger question to me is, how is this group going to come together? Because you've had Kennard on the field at times, but he hasn't necessarily played with the two guys that are taking up the middle and the opposite side because he's been hurt. You know, JT Thomas came to the team last year. Brinkley really was only a contributor for half the year. So it's more about the chemistry of this group. The one thing I will say about the linebackers, with Harrison and Hankins, if you can stop the run more effectively at the point of attack in the trenches, that's going to give you better production from your linebackers, because that means that the running back's not getting to the second layer of your defense too often. And that happened a lot last season. So I think, to me, let's see what Hankins and Harrison can do, because I think the dynamics of those two should actually go hand-in-hand and coincide with how the linebackers are going to play, depending on how much is going to be on their plate to help clean up the run.
I would agree with that. Also, I want to piggyback off of what Charlie said already. I don't feel as negative about the O-line as Charlie up in Maine does, Phil, but I do think we need to upgrade that the right tackle. All in all, this offense wasn't that bad. I mean, it's not the end of the world. This offense was pretty good. And then when you add in Shepard and hopefully get Cruz back, I mean, and the defense, if it steps up the way what we hope it's going to be, I mean, you're talking about five games that we definitely could have won if we had a defense that's probably going to be on the field like it should be on this year. And that's pretty much all I have to say, guys. I'll take everything off the air.
Well, Joe, appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, and you know, keep in mind, you know, this is – it's not like – it's just the defense that improved. I'm telling you, Sterling Shepard is going to be something special for this offense. He really is. Defenses are really going to have a hard time with both him and Odell Beckham Jr. They are. So, and you look at the amount of points and the success that this offense had last year, it's and if they can stay healthy, forget about it.
Well, that's why I think it's important, and you were alluding to this, Anita, as well as some of the callers, when you evaluate the offense and the outlook for 2016, you have to consider the improvements that were made on defense. I'm going to go back to the point that Charlie made about, you know, all that money was spent on one side of the ball, and in his mind, it wasn't necessarily spent on the offensive line. But the whole point is an improved defense helps your offense. Because just think about the pressure that was on the offense last season, Anita, to score consistently throughout the course of games. There were a number of offensive clinics because the amount of points and yardage that the defense gave up. If your defense improves, then that means the amount of pressure that the offense is going to feel and the amount of load that they'll have to shoulder, I'm not saying is going to drastically go down. You're still going to have to score points, but instead of necessarily asking your offense to go out and score maybe 35 a game, you can maybe win a game with 25 to 27 points.
And also, you know, when you have a defense like that and you're able to hold teams and keep them from moving the chains, and then you've got solid special team play, your starting position, you know, when you do, you know, every position possession that this offense is going to get, they're going to have better field position where they're going to be starting once the defense is able to hold down an opposing offense and then special teams kind of does their thing. So I'm curious, do you, if you can call it up, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but like, what was the average starting position for?
Starting field position?
Yes.
Yeah, that I'd have to find. That I don't have in front of me.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's going to, I know that you got to go to special.
Yeah.
Because because I think that is drastic. To me, that is drastically going to improve this season for the Giants, hands down.
Well, I think also, though, that'll play a role and will be affected by how, you know, teams decide they want to return on kickoffs and so forth with the new rule in terms of the spot of the starting point based on touchbacks.
Right.
So, you know, who knows what the dynamics of that is going to be and how it plays out, because, you know, you may not want to return it as much if you don't see there's going to be much of an incentive. So I don't know if necessarily that's going to be as indicative of a team's success as it was in previous years. I mean, the point that I was touching on in terms of the defense, if you look at the Giants last year, they gave up about 28 points a game. So that was 30th in the NFL. See, for those of you who feel yardage is not necessarily a better indicator, points per game to me is a better indicator. So, you know, points per game, they were 30th in the NFL. That means that if you wanted to win games, your offense had to average about 30 points a game. And if you look at on the offensive side of the ball, just out of curiosity, last season, let's see how many teams averaged over 30 points a game in terms of offensive production for points, just to show you, you know, the challenges of that and what you're placing on your offense. Last season, two teams in the NFL averaged more than 30 points per game. Carolina, just over 31, and Arizona, 30.6. So if your defense is surrendering 28 points a game, Anita, your offense needs to average about 30 a game in order to make up that deficit. Yet only two teams did that.
Yeah, and also keep in mind, those two teams, two of the best defenses
correct
in the NFL last year.
No,
as
that's
well
a very good point, too. Absolutely. So, and those defenses scored points. Think about how opportunistic Carolina was. So it's not even if the offense had to produce 30, because your defense almost gave you a touchdown a game. So that's why I think it's important to note defensive improvement is going to help the offense. And it's not just, okay, well, you address defense, but, you know, they're not going to necessarily help your offense. It goes hand in hand. And that's why that needs to be a part of the conversation. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Carl in Charlotte. Carl, what's happening?
Not much. How you doing, Lance? How you doing, Anita?
Doing well, Carl. How's things with you?
Pretty good, pretty good. You guys, I love you guys. You guys keep me going down here in the South.
Appreciate
you have
that
no idea how bad sports radio is down here.
Well, we are happy that you tune in and take part in the program. Thanks a lot.
That being said, I do got to get on you a little bit.
On me? On me or Lance?
Or both of you.
Or both
all
of us.
Of you,
okay.
Actually,
okay. All right.
Here it goes. I understand Charlie's frustration. Everybody knows Marshall Newhouse is not a starter in the NFL. Everybody knows that. I'm not going to try and get on the guy, but he's just not. He's been cut everywhere. And I've seen him get blown up in running plays and on pass plays countless times last year. Here's where the confusion comes in. We didn't address the right side of the line at all, free agency or in the draft. You guys say all the time you can't evaluate anyone until the pads are on? And when do the pads go on?
Well, training camp, you'll see that.
Training camp.
Okay. So if we're evaluating somebody who's on the team, then we won't know until the start of training camp. If they don't work out, then we got to start scrambling around to find somebody else, and it'll be deep into training camp before he's evaluated.
But listen, at the end of the day, these coaches know what time it is with these guys. They know.
They're in the classroom with these guys. They're testing their mental capacities. And OTAs, you can at least see footwork. You may not see physicality so much, but there's a way to evaluate them. But I think more so than that, the point is, Carl, that there also needs to be some time frame to evaluate these guys. You know, Charlie's phone call, if that's what you're pinpointing, you know, he's pointing to this depth chart. If you look at the depth chart on the offensive line call, there's a number of guys who have very limited time in the NFL, which means that there's limited time that they've even been here in the offseason program. So coaches, sometimes they need some time to get an idea of what you're going to be bringing to the table, as opposed to they just arrived here in the offseason, and then voila, you already know what you're working with. That's the point I'm trying to bring up here.
Okay, but then the other point is that you guys, and here's the confusion, everybody knows an offensive line needs time to gel. So by the time you do find somebody better than Newhouse, you're going to be right up against game one against Dallas. But you're going to be right there with no cohesion on the line.
Go ahead, Amy.
I mean, another thing, understand something. The new collective bargaining agreement, it's not just the Giants. I mean, it's all the teams out there. I mean, let's face it. Since the new collective bargaining agreement, if you really pay attention to all the games that are being played, when you look at games like week 5 and week 6, they're totally different than the games you see in week 2 and week 3. Because the collective bargaining agreement and the rules now in regard to what coaches and what teams can and cannot do in training camp and OTAs, none of these guys are ready. So,
yeah, but that even furthers Charlie's point. Just because we should have addressed the right side of the line in free agency or in the draft, we're waiting way, way, way too late.
Listen, I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, there are a number of people who would have loved this organization to go out and draft a right tackle, and I think really that's it. I think that there's some really high hopes and big expectations for Bobby Hart this season. I really do. He's lost weight. Hopefully he's matured a little bit. I mean, that's been, in my opinion, everything I've heard, the biggest knock about him is, you know, his maturity level and him taking a step up. I think that there's some big expectations for him. John Jerry, is he one of the best guards in the NFL? No, but can he fit the bill? Yes, until Bobby Hart is ready. So I think we're really talking about that right tackle position. But it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
So now Jerry Reese is always known
for signing one-year contracts. Why couldn't he just go ahead and get a couple of guys for 1 year? And like Charlie said, if somebody gets hurt, man, we're finished. We are finished.
Well, but here I go back to it. You know, for example, based on the reports, the Giants, you know, at least there was some speculation about Russell Okung. Carl, I'll use his name as an example. And Okung wound up signing with Denver. And there was talk about Okung wanted to play on the left side. He didn't want to necessarily play on the right side. So the point I'm bringing up here, Carl, is to say that the Giants didn't do any due diligence in working on bringing in other free agents is a little misleading, because it's a two-way stream. If they said, hey, you know what, we're interested in bringing you in, but we want you to compete for the right tackle spot, and the guy looks at the team and says, I'm only interested in playing the left, then it's not a good fit for the team. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the player has to want to come to the team. Just because somebody wasn't signed doesn't mean that efforts weren't made to bring in other options. And Anita threw out the name Bobby Hart. You mentioned that the Giants didn't draft anybody. Bobby Hart was a seventh-round pick last year. So the time that he's been here with the team is limited. He had one game where he really was able to go out there and play consistently. That's essentially the equivalent of a draft pick this year. What's the difference if you brought in a seventh-round pick this year or you got a seventh-round pick on the offensive line last year? You still have a young guy in the mix competing for potentially a starting spot.
Well, I hope so. I really hope so. But you can definitely understand a fan's confusion
anxiety. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I guess we're just trying to be a little bit more optimistic about it, because again, and my optimism comes in that I don't think that this is the final roster for the offensive linemen. And I understand your point where, listen, Anita, then if that's the case, then this is a unit more so than any other. I guess you can debate whether it's the DB division in regard to that they need to gel and they need to be cohesive and they need to be on one page. You're absolutely right. So by going and maybe bringing somebody in as we get closer to training camp, you know, is that how hurtful, how harmful is that? On the grand scheme of things, I don't think much. So,
the DBs have some experience. They've played in games before. We don't even know if the right tackle's ever played in an NFL game yet. We have no idea.
So, I guess what I'm saying is I'm just more optimistic than most that they are going to bring another name in here that's really going to compete for that right tackle position.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, Carl. Appreciate the phone call. And, you know, okay. I mean, it's not so much an optimistic spin. It's just providing some perspective here in the conversation in terms of at least understanding the dynamics of what goes on in free agency. And while as a fan you may see there were a number of players out there, it doesn't mean that the team didn't speak to those players, and it doesn't mean that those players, what they were hearing and the opportunities that perhaps the team could provide was what they were looking for. You know, all of those things need to add up for a player to come in and want to sign here. Or, you know, feel that, hey, I want to be a right tackle. I'm willing to make that move. There's a lot of different things that go on in the conversation. So that's why I said just because a player wasn't signed doesn't mean the effort wasn't made to go out and grab somebody to perhaps improve the offensive line and so forth. But Bobby Hart is still an option. And he's a young guy who, to me, is the equivalent of a draft pick this year, given his limited experience last season. So
let me ask you something. And granted, like I get it. I get that the philosophy here is that the Giants organization really wants to lock down that left side of the line. And, of course, we're talking about Flowers, Pugh, and Richburg. It's really important, that blind side, to have that and that cohesiveness on that side. But at the end of the day, let's say tomorrow is regular season game one against the Dallas Cowboys. Do you think this offensive line would be more successful with Pugh at right tackle and John Jerry and Bobby Hart at guards? Or do you, or are you kind of in the mindset of where this organization is in keeping that left side of the line cohesive and going with Bobby Hart and Marshall Newhouse?
I think you keep the left side cohesive. Okay. I think that there's been so much game of musical chairs, which is a term I love to throw out with respect to the offensive line, that you know, you finally have some continuity, Nita. You finally have three guys that are getting a feel for one another. The last thing I would want to do is try to rip that apart. You can experiment all you want on the right side because, let's face it, Newhouse and Jerry, it's not as if they've been playing together for years next to one another. And at the same time, it's not as if the left side's been together for 10 years too, but I feel what you worked on last year from the beginning of training camp. Because remember, Flowers was on the left side from the get-go because Beattie got hurt before training camp and all of that. So you knew what you were getting into. Why start to toy with that? I would say let Hart, let Newhouse compete on the right side, and then let the best man win, which is exactly what they're doing in OTAs right now. Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Adam is in New Jersey. Adam, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, hey, Anita, how are you?
Doing well, Adam. How's things with you?
Great. I'm just calling about two things. I'll touch on the offensive line first. I think people are panicking. Like you guys mentioned, there's a lot of influx going on, but I believe in this Giants coaching staff. That's what I believe. I believe they're going to address the problems. It's not like Jerry Reese and McAdoo don't talk to each other. We keep harping on Jerry Reese not doing the job, Jerry Reese not doing the job, when it's a collective group together. McAdoo, Mike Solari, they're all sitting in the room together evaluating their players, going down the list saying, hey, can this guy fill this void? Can this guy do this? Can this guy do that? So it's not just one person. And you got to let Bobby Hart develop. That's why you drafted him in the seventh round, right? And honestly, I think John Jerry isn't as bad as people think. If you watch the games that John Jerry plays, yes, he's inconsistent. His consistency is not there. However, he's not that bad of a player. Plus, he played 8-plus games last year, so he's building cohesion with Richburg and those guys. Now, if you were to get rid of Marshall Newhouse and put Bobby Hart there, Marshall Newhouse is going to be the swing tackle, which he was signed on to be. He was signed on to be a swing tackle to help in the running game and be that extra tight end. So either way, whoever wins that job, they're going to help out on the right side now because they'll have two guys guys with experience, Bobby Hart, who has a year in the system, and Marshall Newhouse. So either guy who switches is going to play that swing tackle position, I feel, and that's going to help the offensive line as well as that cohesion. Now, my second point is I want to get excited about the defense, people, because if you look at it, the offensive line didn't lose the games last year. The defense lost the games last year, okay? The offense scored enough points to win games. They scored 24-plus points a game. That's enough to win ball games if you can make stops. The Saints game, we didn't make a stop. The Jets game, we didn't make a stop. The Carolina game, I can keep going down the list on the defense. The offense put up the numbers to get there. So I think all this optimism or negativity about the offensive line, people need to just watch the games from last year. See what happened. Yes, Marshall Newhouse did give up pressures according to some website, Pro Football Focus. But the film doesn't lie. Watch the film. See what they did. See how they schemed. See what the offense is doing. They're doing short passes, which means if they're doing short passes, Eli's going to get the ball out of there, which means a lot of the offensive line can be masked and you can help develop Bobby Hart. Now, again, I'm going to the defensive side of the ball because that's where I'm excited. I'm excited for JPP and Olivier Vernon. Why? Well, if everybody watched Robert Harris, who I think was an adequate pass rusher last year, you're going to have Olivier Vernon, who had the most hits in the NFL last year on defense. And now you put him with a guy who's hungry and JPP, who is going to command a double team. What are you going to do? And then you have to double team Damon Snacks Harris. So I think this defense is going to be a lot of fun. I think Spags is going to have, you know, a lot of toys to play with. If you watched last year, they brought a lot of pressure. The problem is they didn't have the talent to get that pressure executed well because Craig Dahl is not the greatest safety. They brought Landon Collins on blitzes. Their linebackers didn't fill all the holes. Now that you have this new influx of talent and defense and you can move these guys around, I think you're going to see Spags really get off the ground with this defense, and you're going to see a lot more turnovers, a lot more sacks, and hopefully a couple more stops in the game. The Giants' defense, again, doesn't need to be the best. It just needs to be pretty good to get us a couple more wins.
Well,
that's all
there's certainly potential for that. I don't disagree with anything you said, Adam, and appreciate the phone call. The other thing to keep note of in terms of last year's defense was the fact that, you know, the personnel changed a lot because of injuries. You very rarely had game-to-game the same 11 guys on the field, and that's also a contributing factor as to why you can't bring pressure so often because these guys have not necessarily played next to one another. We got a few more minutes left in the program. I want to try to squeeze in a few more calls. We got Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening? How we doing, Chase?
Hey, what's going on, Lance? How you doing, Anita?
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, too. I have two things, y'all. First thing is everybody was talking about stats and everything today. I guess that's the topic. And my thing is I don't have the stat on top of my head, but the main concern I had with last year, and I'm not saying that it's this year, but half of it is. But my main concerns was running the ball and defending the run. Now, in this offseason, I feel like we addressed the against the run. When you got JPP and possibly Snacks Harris on one side where you usually run to that side, the right side of the offensive line, the opponent team, and if you have JPP and Snacks there, good night. And then you go on the other side. If you go on the other side to Hank and Vernon, they not no chicken soup neither on that against the run. So I think they addressed it. And the linebackers, I feel like it's way better. So I think against the run is improved. But running the ball, and it, I guess I'm beating a dead horse here again with Charlie. But that offensive line, the right side of the offensive line, needs to be addressed so we can run the ball. When you run the ball, you can control time possession. You can control the game. That's it. Now, we can pass for 100 times, but if we can't run the ball when it's third and one, it's all for nothing. Then we're going to have to punt. So this is what I'm saying. We got to address that offensive line. It should not be ignored. Jerry, McAdoo, don't know it. My last thing is linebackers. Now, y'all saying you Anita, preferably, you saying that you really want to see the competition between Robinson and Brinkley. But what I actually want to see is I want to see Brantley take control of this team. And I want to see Robinson on the outside. And hear me out, why? I know he played middle linebacker in Washington and everything. But with his skill set, with his speed, with his cover skills, I think he can be great on the outside as a weak linebacker. And what do you think about that?
Well, he comes from a 3-4 system. I think that he can play on the outside. I wouldn't disagree with you there, Shakes. I just don't know if the Giants envision putting him out there. There's a two distinct differences between those statements. I mean, right now he's been mainly a middle linebacker. It's early. They may move him around, but I think right now the main vision is for him to compete in the middle.
And you want to see him take over J.T. Thomas's position?
Yes, I know you love him, but I want J.T. Thomas to be a reserve. I think he's a great backup. He can come in a few games and fulfill a job. But for to rely on him as a starter for 16, nah.
Well, they'll probably mix and match. You know, everybody's not locked into their respective positions. I wouldn't necessarily say right now we know for sure it's going to be J.T. Thomas, Jasper Brinkley, and Devon Kennard. I think a lot could play out for the remainder of training camp and what we see in the preseason game. So, you know, those guys may be penciled in right now, Shakes. That doesn't mean that they have solidified those jobs by any means.
Okay. And look out for Shepard, too. Everybody's forgetting about Calvin Shepard, not Sterling. But Calvin Shepard, look out for him, man. Don't sleep. And thanks for taking my call, y'all.
You got it, Shakes. Appreciate the phone call.
You know, another point you made earlier, and hopefully fans are you know, realizing this, and that is with the Giants defensive line being one of the worst in the NFL last year, it really took a toll on the linebacking core. I mean, did we really get a fair assessment, evaluation of this linebacking core, considering that they were playing behind that defensive line? I mean, listen, when I was in Baltimore, there was a time where Ray Lewis's contract was coming up, and Ray Lewis meant everything to that Baltimore area, but there was talks of him possibly going to the Dallas Cowboys. Why? Because he said, listen, unless you go out and you draft some defensive linemen, I'm not staying here, because my job as a linebacker is to go up against fullbacks. It's not to go up against offensive linemen. And sure enough, they went out. They drafted Haloti Ngata. I want to say it was Kelly Gregg, they redid his deal. They brought in Jimmy Johnson. I'm trying to think, Adalis Thomas. So, you know, that was one thing that Ray Lewis really, in a roundabout way, threatened the Baltimore Ravens with. And Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys actually were quite interested to bring Ray to Dallas. So, you know, it's one of those things. Like and you hit on this a little bit earlier on the show, and that is we're really going to get a true sense in regard to just how good this linebacking core is with the great defensive line that the Giants have gone out and pretty much paid for. Let's face it, they've paid for it.
Absolutely. No, I agree. The dynamics between the linebackers and defensive line, it may be nice to say, but it's truly important. And I think there's more than enough evidence, not just with the Giants, a few teams. Let's close out the program with T in Maryland. T, what's happening? How we doing, T?
I'm doing good. Now, Lance, guess what? I'm going to agree with you today.
Okay.
We're going to call you. This is going to be a first. And
fair enough.
Anita, hi. I haven't talked to you yet. I just started calling, you know, a month ago, and I talked to Paul, Lance, and everybody else, and John, but I haven't talked to you, and you're such a beautiful person. But on to business. Okay, Charlie, I love him to death, and I even had to get off the phone for Charlie a couple times. Lance, you owe me a follow for that. But I have to disagree with him. If Charlie would have paid attention to the last four games when Bobby Hart came in and rotated a guard and a tackle, and when they finally settled down from this running back by committee and let Rashad Jennings get into a rhythm, the running game improved and the pass protection improved. The only thing that didn't improve was we didn't have Odell for one game, and then, you know, the receivers that we had at the time, I'm just going to say the inexperience caught up with them, and, you know, a couple turnovers.
You're talking about
that
Vikings game, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the only thing, but Rashad had, and he ran, and he did not only run to the left, he ran to the right a good amount of the time, and he was getting yards, especially in the Minnesota game. So I know time is short, so I just had to say that because I wasn't going to call until I heard Charlie go in, and I was like, oh, here we go again. Now I have to refute everything he just said.
Charlie gets everybody going, not only getting you to call in, but also on Twitter. It's funny.
Yeah, Charlie's got a talent, though.
But I just had to defend the line because, like you guys said, and Anita, I hardly, even no matter what show it is, I hardly agree with Lance. But on this one, I have to agree with him because
fair enough.
We have to wait out and play, let it play out and see.
Well, that's exactly what the team's going to do right now, and they're starting to do some of the heavy lifting in OTAs, where Hart and Newhouse are being interchanged with the first team at right tackle, and they're going to go from there. I don't think anybody has necessarily, once again, penned in the offensive line, and T, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. But Bobby Hart, you know, for those campaigning that you wanted a young guy brought in, Hart's still a young guy. He was only drafted in 2015 in the seventh round, and he played in 9 games last season, not necessarily all as an offensive lineman, special teams too, and he had 1 start last year. So the resume is very, very small compared to some other young offensive linemen who come in from day one. So that, to me, is an equivalent of as if you drafted a kid this year as well. And we'll see what happens moving forward. But right now they're working with the internal options, because the free agent market is very slim pickings at this point. You can't expect to have a savior on the street. 888-201, excuse me, I'm getting caught up with my other numbers. You get so many shows
happens,
and everything.
Happen,
yes,
201-939-4513.
That is the telephone number. We will be back up and running tomorrow, taking more of your phone calls and giving you the latest in terms of OTAs.
So tomorrow is OTA access
for
a lot of the media, so we'll have a lot more information to share with you tomorrow as well.
Absolutely, and we'll keep you posted. We'll have also players talking to the media, coaches as well, so we'll hear more news and the latest in terms of the makeup of the team. We'll speak to you tomorrow. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com.